A philosopher once asked, are we human because we gaze at the stars? Or do we gaze at them because we are human? Pointless, really. Do the stars gaze back? Now that's a question.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 7, Stardust. I'm your host, Chris, and this podcast is about me becoming a man, which is a much greater story. With me tonight, switching seats this time, in chair number 2, killing off his brothers made him king of all Stormhold. Oh, sorry. No, wait, he's not. He's doing this podcast. In fact, he's gone all the way to Ipswich to be on this podcast. It's Pete!
Hello. Yes, it was important to do everyone in, but, you know, in the very ends, what can I do but bleed blue blood?
That's awesome how you can do that. That's a good gift if you can use that. Picks up the ladies. Anyway, in chair number 3 tonight, I'd slaughter a polar bear and bring her back its head, and I don't even want to know what she'd do with it. It's Sharon.
Ooh, that's really gross. Couldn't I have something beautiful like diamonds or that star sparkling in the sky overhead?
You want me to bring you back a star?
I would like you to bring me back a star, yes.
Are you
sure?
Oh my
god, there's a movie in that.
Threesome! Okay, so we're going to be talking about the 1974 movie Stardust.
Wait,
with
you
David
meant for
Essex
me, right?
And Larry Hagman. I'm kidding. We're going to be... we're going to be talking about the 2007 movie Stardust with Daredevil and Claire Danes.
Mm-hmm. You mean Charlie
with
Cox?
Daredevil and Shop Girl.
Yeah, so Daredevil's in this. You know, who knew Charlie Cox before Daredevil came out? I mean, other than us, because we love this movie so much.
I think fans of British television, probably.
Yeah. This is the only thing I had seen him in, except for... And then we saw him on Downton Abbey.
Right.
In one episode. And he was a jerk in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daredevil came out. We're like, yay, Charlie's back!
I want to go to Candy Mountain, Charlie.
You may find it interesting to find that this movie is banned in the Philippines.
What?
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, because Claire Danes spoke so badly about the Philippines.
Oh, no.
That they banned anything she's in the Philippines.
Wow.
She said the whole place smelled like cockroaches and sewage.
Wow.
Oh, that's harsh.
and there were rats everywhere, she says.
I would ban her, too. I mean, yeah.
So the Philippines went, you know what? We're not showing any of your movies.
Because we can't feel the love. We don't feel the love for you.
Yes. So I did not know who Claire Danes was. I mean, I had heard the name, but I had never seen her in anything before this movie came out.
Oh, you hadn't seen My So-Called Life?
Never did.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. And this movie, I read the book, and I'm pretty sure I read the book to Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
I read the book to Calista.
Okay. One of the first things I noticed about this movie version of the book is that they changed the main character's name.
Yes.
By a
single letter.
Yes, they took out that second R, which made his name really impossible to say out loud.
Tristran,
yeah. So it was like, I was reading the book to Sharon, and I think I might have dropped the second R during the reading of it, because it's not an easy name to say.
I actually pronounced it Tristran and most of the time that I did.
Okay. So they renamed him Tristan in this version. And the second difference that I noticed about the movie is that the star did not say what she said in the book when she fell and found out that her leg was broken.
Well, that and Tristran in the book is gone for a year.
Yeah.
Well, now I want to know what she said.
Very different.
She dropped the F-bomb when she fell to Earth.
Okay.
Well,
yes,
fell
indeed.
To Fairyland.
Yeah, see, I didn't remember that because that just seems ordinary to me to do that if you fall and break your leg.
So the story is ostensibly about Tristan going on this quest, but there are other motivators in this story, and they're all after the star.
Well,
other motivators.
You know, Christopher.
Huh.
I would say this story is a story about a boy in love with a girl, and of course, everything he does is for the girl. But the twist in this story is that he finds out that she wasn't the right girl for him. And then there was another girl who was the right girl, and he realizes it in the end, and I just summarized the whole movie.
You did, and what starts the action going and what starts Tristan off on his quest is this little 30-second clip that I've got. I can play that, and this pretty much sums up why Tristan does everything he does for the first half of the movie. Okay. So I'm going to play that out.
Okay. For your hand in marriage, I'd cross the wall and I'd bring you back that falling star.
You can't cross the wall. Nobody crosses the wall. Now you're just being silly.
I'm not being silly. I'd do it. For you, I'd do anything.
My very own star.
Uh-huh. Raisum!
It seems we have ourselves in agreement. You have exactly 1 week, or I'm marrying Humphrey.
So Tristan's this ordinary, you know, schlub kid from the city, the town of Wall, except he's not really an ordinary schlub kid because he's got a fey heritage.
True, because the rulers of Stormhold have some sort of magical lineage. So,
well, apart from that, you know from the start of the movie, from his birth, that he's the child of some sort of fairy person.
Okay.
Someone who said she was a princess.
Right.
Did she say she was?
Yes, she did.
She said she was a princess and she'd been captured by a witch.
Ah, yes. Okay. You're right, of course.
And that's why she gave Dunstan the white flower.
Good point.
Yes. So that motivates Tristan to go find the star. But the witches also want the star because if they cut out the heart of a star, they basically fuel their magic for X number of years beyond that.
Yes, it makes them young again.
Right.
And in this case, it's a triumvirate of witches, just like, you know, in any kind of given Shakespearean setting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And by this point, they are crones or hags.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that they desire for their to maintain the youth.
And the princes are after the witch, or after the star, because she has the amulet. But do they really need the star?
I mean, so why is the amulet important, Chris?
Because whoever brings back the amulet would become the next king.
All right.
But do they need the star?
They don't need the star.
They don't need the star.
They need the amulet.
Right. So if she had just put the amulet, or if she had never picked up the amulet that knocked her out of the sky in the first place, like, they wouldn't have cared about her. The story of Primus and Septimus, who are basically the ones who survived the first act of the show.
Right. They wouldn't have cared.
Would not have intersected the star.
And it wasn't really all that important until later in the story when Septimus discovers that there is a star who is in possession of the stone. And so now it's doubled the prize for him.
What does the star... I've forgotten. What does the star mean to him?
When Bernard tells him about the girl being a star, he says a star, and then he says immortality. King forever.
You're right. Okay, you're right.
Yes.
So that is something to him.
Yes. So it's become a double thing, but primarily he wants to be king of Stormhold.
And living forever wouldn't be half bad.
No.
Yeah.
And can I say, I want to see Mark Strong in everything that ever comes out ever.
I really do love Mark Strong.
Because I think he's fantastic.
I really
in
do
this
too.
And everything I've seen him in.
He made the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes for me.
Uh-huh.
It's just he can bring sinister, he can bring a lot of different things. I just loved especially the way that when he's talking to the soothsayer, he just turns to him and gets very chatty with him.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean? What does this say? You know?
Yeah, and there's even in that casual conversation, there's that air of menace that Mark Strong can bring to, like, ordering a sandwich.
Oh yeah, completely.
And you know, we just saw him in Kingsman.
Oh yes, as Merlin, fantastic.
At your recommendation, Pete. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Fabulous.
I was happy to do so. He has one of my favorite lines in that also.
So this is Chris's new
fucking man.
This is Chris's new man crush now. So
yeah,
definitely. So I have a girl crush.
Okay.
It's still Michelle Pfeiffer.
There you go.
Yeah, because I was trying to tell Chris that Michelle Pfeiffer was in The Witches of Eastwick.
Yes.
And And he said, no, she wasn't in that. And I said, yes, she was.
And she was.
And so
I thought it was just Cher and someone else.
No, nope. Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer.
No, yeah, there you go. I just remember Cher being in it and going, eh, I don't want to see that.
So
it's too bad. It's got one of my. It's got a monologue that I actually used in a competition.
The one that he says. The one that.
Yes. The one that he says in the church.
Yes, at the end, toward the end.
Towards the end. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can totally see you doing that because he says, and I did everything for you.
Oh, no. He says, let me ask you folks a question. You're all good church-going folks. Do you think God knew what he was doing when he invented woman? No shit.
Yes.
Because I really want to know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very powerful.
It's painfully misogynistic, but it's such a great monologue to play, you know? And the fact is that he's a villain and an asshole, and so of course he's going to be misogynistic.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of great performances,
mm-hmm.
The captain of the
Captain
ship.
Shakespeare?
Captain Shakespeare. I love him. I just want to go up and hug him. Like if I ever saw him at a con.
Also different from the book.
Yes, very different from the book.
Yes.
Oh, tell us how it's different from the book, because I read the book, but I don't remember how he's different.
I don't remember exactly how the captain in the book is. I just remember seeing the movie and going, what have they done?
The funny thing is I can't either off the top of my head, but I just remember it's like, really? That's an interesting choice.
But
it's, it's just fun to see.
But he was still friendly toward them, right? Friendly and kind.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Sky Pirates are completely friendly to them throughout the whole encounter in the book.
Okay. Can you play my favorite line from the movie?
Which one?
Do you know what it is? Do you know what my favorite line from the movie is?
No, don't be silly. Nonsense. It's all right, Captain. We always knew you were a whoopsie.
Then he gets pushed to the back.
Yeah. That's probably the safest thing they could have said there.
Yeah. Best scenes in that is Captain Shakespeare putting on the can-can.
Uh-huh.
And dressing up in drag while his ship is being besieged by Septimus's men.
Right.
Yeah, just fantastic.
Did we watch that movie with the audio description? Or did you just describe it to me?
I just described everything.
Well, it was brilliant when you
described
it.
There is no audio description on this. And I really think if there comes a Blu-ray version that has an audio description, I'm going to grab it right up, because we've been finding a lot of audio description on things lately, including Daredevil.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it's made my life a lot easier. Yeah.
I love it. And
We heard that. And I was like, oh good, Netflix is finally, moving up and, stepping up and doing something good. And Sharon went, well, of course, it's about a blind person. And I went, duh.
Yeah, I just thought I'd point that out to you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did.
In case you didn't get it. Yeah. So. Just saying.
Yeah.
It's an interesting... I guess the things that I find most interesting between book and movie is the fact that in the book, he's gone for a year, and so he encounters more dangers and a greater cast of interesting folk
mm-hmm.
in his quest.
But the basic story is still the same.
But the basic story is essentially the same.
Mm-hmm. But I think in the movie, it's only a week, because she says, I'll give you 7 days. So
right. All
the pirate adventures, when he learns to sword fight... It doesn't make as much sense.
That whole falling in love and learning the sword fight and dancing and stuff montage, that's got to be 3 days tops.
You mean in the movie?
In the movie, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't... but, I mean, I guess you have to just suspend your...
You smile and nod. I mean, this
smile
is this,
nod.
You can't complain about reality when this is the same ship where he got a haircut to make his hair longer.
Exactly.
I don't think you told me that part.
I did.
Yes, Robert De Niro as Captain Shakespeare is explaining, he's explaining his name.
He's getting a haircut.
Was giving a haircut to Tristran, in which he was actually lengthening his hair.
Oh, okay. Well,
instead of cutting it shorter.
That helps.
Yes,
absolutely.
So he has a wonderful mane of hair when he's introduced as mm-hmm. Captain Shakespeare's nephew.
Okay. Also, something that I noticed from the book is that when I read the book at first, I didn't like the star. She was just very, very snotty. And you just kind of wanted to tweak her nose and just tweak.
Well, I mean, that's you know, the character development is that by the end of the book, you do warm to her, even if you don't love her.
Yes, you do warm to her. But I think, did you think she was haughty in the movie or not so much?
I think she was more contrary than haughty at the beginning. Although she is incredibly insulting when they first meet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't she have a broken leg when they first met?
Well, yeah, because Tristan breaks her leg.
Yeah.
When he hits her.
No, she broke her leg when she fell. She's touching her leg when she's alone and trying to stand up.
Oh.
But isn't it because he threw the thing?
No, it's because the King of Storm...
Hold
Glen... Whatever. Stormcrow. Yes, okay.
Stormhold.
Threw the amulet.
Okay, so what was not Tristan's fault?
I keep saying Kristen, too.
Tristan.
Correct.
Tristan and Isolde. That's what keeps me on par.
Yeah.
Track there.
Oh, yes, okay.
Tristan and Isolde.
Love story.
But, yeah, the train of thought derailed. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So, Dunstan, Tristan's father, goes across the wall in the first, you know, the kind of a cold open, I guess. It's not really. It's the part where the narrator's kind of giving you some background.
The prologue. And,
yeah. And so he meets Una, the slave of the witch, and she gives him... He asks how much something costs, and there's a weird... Well, just listen.
These ones, the blue ones. How much are they?
They might be the color of your hair. Or they might be all of your memories before you were three. I can check if you like.
So clearly these things have set prices.
Things don't have set prices?
They do have set prices in this movie. But what kind of economy is that based on?
Magic.
It's a magical economy. I love that.
How is that self-sustaining?
You know, you ask too many questions because, let's face it, when it comes to just the basics of any mathematical system, it breaks down in the presence of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's the same thing as in a capitalist society. It's whatever people want. If people want the memories before you were three, or... I mean, it's just a scarf. So she's just saying sort of things that would... like she says, the color of your hair. So she's... Mm-hmm. Sort of saying things that a person without money could give.
Well, if it were the color of his hair, then what color hair would he walk away with?
I think we're not sure.
White.
Maybe white, because the color of his hair would be taken.
Isn't white the absence of pigment in the hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you know he would walk away with white hair, and white is a color. You know.
Or
not necessarily. It could be considered the absence of, or all his hair may have fallen out. You never know.
Yes.
Mm,
Or maybe she could have charged somebody, you know, like 2 years off, you know, your life or 2 years of...
Oh, yeah, no, that's the whole thing. That there's all kinds of things that you can play around with in that regard.
Right. Uh-huh.
And as we are not knowledgeable in the ways of their Eldritch and Dwemer economy, we can't tell, you know, what exactly those things would be good for or... How, you know, they would... What's the script, you know?
Right.
And I don't remember there being an exchange of coin at any point during the movie, so...
Yeah.
The only thing that happens is that they're discussing a cost of the lightning, and they're just saying numbers. They don't say how much, you know, what it is he's paying them.
That's true.
What about in the inn? Do they have to... Does he put a bag of gold, or am I not remembering correctly? Does anybody pay for the room?
For the innkeeper to remember the message? I don't remember.
No, for them to stay the night and have a bath and the
room. I don't think they ever mention a price.
Okay. Again, like I said, I don't think there's an exchange of coin. I'm not sure there is coin of the realm.
Right.
Hmm.
There might not be.
So Fairyland is communist.
No, it's a barter.
It's a barter system.
It's a barter capitalism versus
you trade
versus
for
a
things.
Set capitalist economy.
And it seems like in other fae games, it's sort of the same thing, is that you're bartering for time or a person's true name. Or I think when the one witch meets the other witch, they're sort of sparring. Do you guys know the scene I'm talking about?
When she offers her the heads of the rabbit and feeds her the stress and makes her tell the truth.
Yes, exactly. So there's all this social...
She's Lamia and she's really screwed up.
Right. All this social interaction going on. I love that movie. Totally love it.
But it's not just the social interaction going on. There's also, you know, I mean, she refers to the ordinances of the sisterhood and things like that. There's a whole...
system of rules.
Cultures. There's a whole culture that we're not privy to.
Yes, but we're learning about it through the movie.
Yeah, but we never learn anything more than a little bit, little tidbits.
Yeah. There might be something out there for us to follow up on.
Yeah. Stardust 2.
Stardust. Well, with all the sequels people are making.
Right.
You know, if there was going to be a Stardust 2...
I mean, did you feel like you wanted to know more about this land, that you felt like there should be more stories told in it?
If it were different people.
Right,
I think yes.
I have to tell you that for the most part, there was... I've always felt like this movie skipped over 15 minutes in the transition from Act 1 to Act 2, and then 15 minutes more in the transition from Act 2 to Act 3.
How do you mean?
I just feel like there's this... not only just time compression, but action compression that happens in the story. I mean, it feels like there were dialogues that were had or situations that arose that they either cut out for time or they didn't feel added to the overall story.
Well, I didn't watch deleted scenes. You may be right, but I didn't feel that anything was left out.
I'm just saying that just from a storyteller point of view, there just seems to be little gaps.
You know, I was actually looking for gaps, and I didn't really feel anything became a big gap.
Okay.
I mean, I felt that they left enough in the movie that things come together somewhat organically.
True to a point.
Uh-huh. I'll go along with that.
I feel like there's a little bit missing.
Okay.
You know, there's more stuff in the book, and it's, you know, that fleshes out not only Tristran more, but Yvain and, you know, the world of Stormhold.
Mm-hmm.
Much more so.
So what would you have liked to see in the movie, Pete? A scene where? Like, between what
like
and
from
what?
The book? Or...
Well...
What would have tied things in the movie together for you?
I can't put my finger exactly on it.
Uh-huh.
But just the... it just strikes me that a great deal of the third scene is a racing to someplace.
Yes. The third act.
Right. And it's just, I don't know. I just feel like I always feel like there's something missing, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are remarkable coincidences that bring them all together at the gap in the wall.
Right.
You know, it's a miracle of timing that they all come together there.
Right.
So you're saying, Chris, that you think that's a little contrived.
Well, Dickens could do it.
Yeah.
Dickens did it all the time, you know.
Right.
It's okay,
right.
It just happens that way, because that's the way he wrote it, you know.
Right.
Oh, you're my brother. Oh, and you're my mother.
Right.
I'm really your sister mother, or your aunt.
And we just happen to be identical, and we're not related at all.
Right,
right, exactly.
We just look alike. And so you're going to be the pauper, and I'm going to be the prince.
That was Twain.
Strike that reverse.
That's what I'm saying. A whale with two titties?
My goodness. I could never get through that book. I've tried it 10 times in my life.
Yeah, it's really tough.
I've read both that and Great Expectations.
Great.
I love Great Expectations. I can't stand the French one.
Oh no, Tale of Two Cities is the harder of the two by far. Yeah. But
and I keep trying it, and I just
remember
can't
reading
do
like
it.
An like a 3/4 page paragraph about the color of the guy's socks. It was weird.
So just to bring it back to
you and you're bringing it back.
Stardust for a minute. do you guys have favorite scenes in this?
So
I have a couple.
Yes.
But Chris said so I'm going to let him go.
I was actually going to cue up your scene that you talked about before we started recording.
Please, one of my favorite scenes is Dunstan at the very beginning.
I am charged with guarding the portal to another world, and you're asking me to just let you through?
Yes, because, let's be honest, it's a field. Look, do you see another world out there? No. You see a field. Do you see anything non-human? No. And you know why? Because it's a field!
And it's wonderful because he's the sort of person who had to ask. The very beginning talks about how he wrote to the Royal Academy of Sciences.
Right.
Yes.
And they basically told him, yeah, this isn't real. It's just rural folklore. And so he has to go and look for himself, you know, and it's because he's that kind of a guy, he ends up with Tristan, and Tristan kind of is the kid that he is.
And he helps Tristan on his way, but Dunstan is not really consequent to the rest of the movie.
No.
Well, no, he's just an obstruction.
He's the center.
Right. It is the prologue.
Yes.
Which is a part of fantasy writing that bugs the crap out of me. Okay. Because every single fantasy book has to have a prologue. And it's like, just make it chapter one, guys. It's chapter one. I opened the book, I started reading, I'm in chapter one. Nope, chapter one happens after this.
See,
this section
I
you want to call a prologue.
I don't know if I started on chapter one and by chapter two I was with the Next Generation.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah, I agree with
Pete.
and Chris, even though I'm your wife,
I'm
going to
be like, oh my god, it's GOT all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say I disagree with you too, Chris, because it's just to set things up. The prologue, I feel, is just to put you in the world and give you the flavor. And I was wondering, Pete, if you would have liked to see more about Tristan's dad. Would you have liked to see his...
I'm not sure that I necessarily would like to see more about Dunstan. I think that what I would like to have seen... Okay, here's what I think I would have liked to have seen. I would have liked to have seen the annual fair.
Instead of
just it having a market town, I'd like there to be the annual fair.
Yeah, so that was a key element of the book. That was when Dunstan passed in the book.
And I think that would be a big... That would be more of a...
Crossed, draw, I should say, not passed.
Yeah, that would be more of an engagement for me. I think it would also be kind of cool if they had included the annual fair and Tristan growing up was forbidden to go there.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? So I think that would be... I don't know. And I also wanted to... I guess part of what I wanted to see... I would have liked to have seen characters or a character who exists in both worlds, like in the book. Because one of the things about the book is that Dunstan is putting up people for the fair. And they're from our side of the wall, but they're obvious oddities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're people who possibly dabble in magic or may not be completely human. You know?
Yeah.
And I think it would have been cool and even more organic had they encountered somebody who had met Dunstan or Tristan at the fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and brought them through or helps him out sometime later in the thing. Like the first mate on Captain Shakespeare's ship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like if he'd been to the fair and seen him before.
That would have been awesome.
You know, it would have been.
Yes.
It's little things like that that I think I wanted to see but didn't see, and I understand why, because there are limitations.
It can only be a 2-hour movie, right?
Mm-hmm. It can only be so long of a movie, but there can also only be so much budget,
right?
You know,
there's also only so much story here, and in fact, one of the things that struck me about this viewing was that the people in the story seem to exist in just the right amount of reality to propel Tristan's story.
Okay.
Like, you don't really care about the rest of Dunstan's life or the 18 years between receiving Tristan and sending him off with the Babylon candle.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
It's not really important.
True.
And most of the town of Wall isn't really important.
True.
And you've got this Humphrey fellow. What's his story? Here, let me give you this guy, okay?
Tristan Thorne. Shop boy by day, peeping Tom by night. There's no end to your charms.
Ow.
You know who that is?
Yeah, he's...
That's Superman.
That is your Man of Steel, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he's... But he's... In this, I mean, he's a real butt to be with you. I mean...
But he's almost unrecognizable.
Yes. In fact, after I knew that it was Henry Cavill playing that part, I still refuse to believe it.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
And, you know, I wanted to go back for a second to something you guys were just talking about. Sure. With the fact that if they did put other scenes in it, I love this whole movie. What scene would they take out is the problem. Because the stuff with the brothers dying, oh my gosh. Every single time a brother died, I was laughing.
Oh, the brothers are
like
fantastic.
Like, push off.
It's supposed to be darkly funny.
The right. stuff with the witches, you know, you need to mm-hmm. to understand why they want the star. The all the stuff with Tristan.
Well,
and
you could probably have taken two of the witches' conversations and put them in the same scene, but I didn't think it was, you know, I thought it was broken up in that, you know, sort of pacing.
Yeah.
Right.
The stuff
to keep
with
it going.
Everything with the pirates. I mean, like if I just saw a movie about them and the pirates, I would watch it because. All that stuff was like brilliant and hysterical, and the flying ship and the gathering lightning and the who is the comedian that they go and sell?
Richard Gervais.
Oh, thanks guys. Wow. You guys are amazing.
He's, I think he's the one thing that I could actually drop from this film.
Oh my god.
He's funny, but he's not really necessary.
Yeah.
Okay.
He does give
he was funny.
He gives them an excuse to talk to Ditchwater Sal later.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But that's it.
And he... Doesn't he hook up... Or maybe that's the connection. That's how the one brother finds the ship. That's how the prince finds out...
No, Septimus actually kills Ricky Gervais because...
yeah, I can't remember his
because
name.
Because Lamia has already... has already stolen his voice.
Uh-huh.
Lamia finds out that
yes. Ferdy.
Ferdy, yeah. Lamia finds out from Ferdy that the star is with Captain Shakespeare. But Septimus does not.
See, I would keep him in because I thought he was really, really funny. And I like the way
he's a fun comedic part. He's really good at improvising. But again, it's one of those things where he's not necessary, to my mind, for the total advancement
sure.
of the movie. But, you know, I guess they needed somebody from whom they could, you know, who could be
the connection.
Who could be the Oracle. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. somebody they could link into the main groups of characters. So
mm-hmm.
you're being very rude. Not anymore.
Yeah. It's hard to think about what scenes you take out to put in something else because at least for me anyway, it's I like the scene where Michelle Pfeiffer is giving the star the massage. No, did I just say that?
I'll be in my bunk.
Please, what did you like about that? You don't have to rush this explanation.
Okay,
after that scene when she goes downstairs and they cut away from Primus talking and then they come back and he's pointing at his crotch and saying, "Actually, I've heard it's the biggest in the kingdom."
Yes.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, that's fantastic.
I just thought it was a wonderful. I thought the whole concept, and they took it from the book, of course, but to make her feel relaxed and calm, and then she would shine brighter, I thought was lovely. And then in the movie, because I don't know if that happened in the book or not. I'm not sure if she gave her a massage. I seem to remember that she did give her a bath. I'd have to probably read the book again, but... I don't know. I just thought it was well.
Lamia is not as big of a character in the book.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there's kind of an FU from Una to her, as I remember, towards the end, where she's gone back to being a crone. It might be Yvain who zings her in the end, but basically sends her off to live her life in old and decrepit misery.
I wish I could remember it better.
I think as she gets older, I think too, you know, their powers fade. So I think when they first kind of take the energy from the star, I think it's not just beauty. I think it's also that they're more powerful too.
Well, it's revivifying. It completely restores them to a whole new set of life. You know, so it's going to be.
Well, you know, that's their MacGuffin to want the star.
And they keep saying
it's like a triple MacGuffin here.
Yeah, sister, you know, like watch what your MacGuffin. Use of magic.
What's that?
I like a deep fried triple MacGuffin.
Triple MacGuffin was actually the name of my reggae band in college.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But what you're saying, Sharon, is legit because, you know, she does have to be careful about the amount of magic she's using.
Yeah, and they call her on it, I think, several times.
But she even says, when she shows her arms to them, she goes, oh, please, you know, one transformation and one curse, and this is what I get.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
Yes. But the price of the magic that she expelled or used.
Which I think is fairly fascinating because, for the most part, you don't see anything deleterious happen to Ditchwater Cell when she does whip out the black magic.
Hmm. Yeah, what's her cost?
I believe she might... Maybe she has a different type of magic. It seems like there are two different types of witches to me. Like, you know...
Right, they belong to the sisterhood, but they wield different kinds of magic.
I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how sort of House... Gryffindale and House Slytherin. They're
close enough.
You know, they're just different.
Gryffindale and Slytherin.
Wait, what did I say?
It's you. You were fine.
Sorry. Oh gosh. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I'm a little punchy. Sorry.
Yeah. I think they're different. I think they're different types of witches and. And sort of the, like you said before, the Shakespearean sort of trio of hags with the cauldron. Because they do have a cauldron later on. And I don't know if the other witch, she seemed to deal more in charms and transformations.
But she did transformations, yeah.
Yeah.
Which apparently do carry a price, though, because look what happens to Lamia when she casts a transformation spell.
Yes.
You know,
there was a cost. Yeah.
Well, maybe Sal had a battery somewhere that she was powering it from.
It could be.
Yeah, I don't know if we're supposed to know the answer to that question.
Maybe she collects people's, you know, the color of people's hair and memories and stuff like that. She has a cachet of stuff.
That could well be. That could be what's powering her work.
Mm-hmm. Pete, you're brilliant.
You brought it back together.
Brilliant.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You totally like solved the riddle for me.
What can I say?
Yeah.
It's what I do. It's who I am. It's why I'm here.
That's why you're a prince.
Exactly.
Prince of Thieves.
Yes.
Prince of Filth.
They call me Otto, which means eight.
I know that, but what is that?
Fish called Wanda.
Right.
See, my name is Otto. It means eight.
Oh my gosh, that's one of Chris's favorite movies.
Mine too.
And you didn't remember that line?
No, I knew it, but it was not on the. It was not foremost in my brain.
There
Chris, do you have a favorite part of the movie?
I really like the whole thing, and it's really hard to pick one spot. You know, one part that's. I like the sword fight between, you know, limp floating Septimus
and
Charlie.
Yeah.
Voodoo Septimus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have that clip?
No, I don't. No.
Well, I guess it would just be a sword fight, though.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of metal ringing.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Sharon? We know that you're the massaging leg scene.
Well, when I could see, I have to say Robert De Niro doing the can-can.
Oh, fantastic.
Because,
yeah,
come on. I mean, what's better than dancing pirates?
It's true.
I mean, in your life, I have to say that... Seeing Robert De Niro in those, that will stick in my memory, you know, even though I'm blind. For as long as I live, I will remember, you know, the visual Robert De Niro in those different clothes and just you know, preparing for it. And then
not only that, but he's so joyous. He's so happy to be doing it. It's just such a great scene.
Yeah. And, you know, it really makes me wonder. No, I'm kidding.
And the look on Septimus's face when he walks in.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, pretty much any scene with Septimus in it was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I could see that. I'd have to say that besides that opening one with Dunstan, my second favorite is Soothsayer and Septimus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's definitely top to top. That's it. That's my top.
So I think everybody in this movie gave it their all.
I didn't see any flaws in this. I mean, even Mr. Weasley, you know, playing a goat.
Everybody did bring their A-game to this, and I think that's a big tell for Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, it seems like every movie I've seen him in, everybody brings their A-game, even all the way back to Layer Cake.
Wait, who's Layer Cake?
Layer Cake is the first movie Matthew Vaughn directed. Oh, it's got Daniel Craig and Sienna Miller and Michael Gambon.
Let's see, Kick-Ass, also with Mark Strong. Mm-hmm. But he's doing the new Fantastic Four, and that's terrifying.
Why is it terrifying?
This month, isn't it?
No. Oh, maybe. I don't know. It's I'm looking at IMDb. It says it's in post.
It's coming out soon.
So the music was fantastic.
The music was beautiful.
The music was absolutely spot on for this.
It wasn't Mark Knopfler, but it was very good.
Yeah. You brought up a good point.
Me?
You did, yes. Okay. What Sharon and I were sort of talking about when we were watching this movie. Okay. And something that Jim said, a lot of time during our viewing this time, we were talking about The Princess Bride.
Okay.
And how this sort of is the Princess Bride of this generation.
Yes.
I think it is.
Agreed.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's a short conversation if we
all agree.
Absolutely.
It's certainly not this generation's legend, so.
I can't wait till we do Legend, because, boy, I'm going to let into that.
Well, I think if you were to tell a child about this movie, you would say, there are pirates, there are villains, there are sword fights, there's magic, there's intrigue, there's chases. You know, it's very similar. If you were talking to somebody and giving the same kind of intro, yes, that the grandfather gives to the little boy, mm-hmm. you know, it's a formula, I think, and I think that Princess Bride sort of just gave that magical tradition to movie makers. And even though it didn't do great in the box office, I mean, I'm talking about Princess Bride.
Right. I think, considering how well it's consistently done since, you know, it's
yes. How well did Stardust do? Do we know?
I don't, but I know it also has a small but fierce loyal following mm-hmm. to it. I think it's not so much formulaic as it is a feel to not have to take yourself too seriously if you're doing fantasy.
Yes.
And I think that the foils of the dead princes and the, as you put it, you know, like the Dickensian organic, well, this happened because it happened, or look who's here. You don't have to explain away a whole lot of stuff. You know, you can just keep it fairly light and still keep it engaging.
It is like a custard-filled donut.
It's
even though there's murders and deaths, it's not taking itself too seriously. Sort of like the Scarlet Pimpernel, I think.
Okay.
And the musical one with.
I see.
I'm trying to think of other light and fluffy. I say a donut because light and fluffy and happy. I mean, when the movie ends, you almost want to clap because you feel so good. Inside.
Actually, when I saw it in the theater, everybody did clap.
They did clap. I love it. Yeah, that's beautiful. So,
but it was in D.C. and they had a much more verbal crowd too, so it was to be expected.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at the business page for Stardust, and if this is not cumulative, which it might be cumulative, I'm not real sure. It looks like it didn't do fantastically, but with the international, did well enough.
There you go. Again, kept Matthew Vaughn in with a job, you know, kept him going.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, spot on. I quite liked it. And Sharon.
Is it time to vote? I would give it five.
Sharon.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You have to wait for the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do that dancing, too.
I know. You don't wait. You back lead.
I don't wait.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Stardust?
I'd have to say 3, Chris. No, just kidding. 5.
Okay, that's better. 5. You were about to sleep on the couch. I can tell you that.
5.
All right. Peter.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Stardust?
2. No, I'm kidding. I'm gonna rate it a 4 and an Electrum piece.
Wow. Okay. That's your Electrum right there. I personally... Okay, Sharon, you have to ask me.
Chris?
Yes?
What would you rate Stardust on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces?
I would take the 1 gold piece that I had to give to the Dungeons & Dragons movie and give it to this one to make it 6 gold pieces. But since I can't do that, I will give it 5 gold pieces.
There you go.
Yay! Applause! And the crowd goes wild!
The crowd goes totally mild. No one's on their feet, ladies and gentlemen. It's a complete and utter apathy fest.
Oh my goodness. Mr. Dudley.
Yes, Mrs. Dudley.
What? And Mr. Pete.
Yes.
What is our next movie that we are going to review?
Our next movie, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Our next movie is a wonderful little choice of Senior Chris. And it may be the freshest of all the fantasy movies we're going to review.
We are going to do a movie called Mythica. You know what? I had the subtitle here. Let me grab it. Mythica, A Quest for Heroes.
Ooh.
Ah.
Which came out in January of this very year, 2015.
No way.
Yeah, so it's going to be our newest fantasy movie that we're doing. Ooh. And we're going to bring Brian back to talk about it.
That is awesome. I love Brian. I can't wait.
Can we see if we can bring Mike back for Rain of Fire?
I would love to.
Okay.
So, in the meantime, you're going to probably go through a series of pains that are withdrawal from Dragon Reel. If that happens, I recommend you go to dragonreel.com. You can re-listen to all of our old episodes. You can like us on Facebook. You can send us a note on Facebook. That'd be fantastic. We'd love to hear from you.
Follow us on Twitter.
And follow us on Twitter at dragonreel. You can go to facebook.com/dragonreel. And if you want to email us directly, you can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com. If you go to iTunes and give us a review, we will give you a shout out on the show, because that would be awesome.
And we also have dragonreel.com.
We have dragonreel.com. Mm-hmm. And if you are so into fantasy that you want to hear about role playing games too, head on over to rulezeropodcast.com. That's our other show. Mm-hmm. So that's it for me.
That's it for me.
Have a wonderful night.
And it's the largest in all of Stormhold, so they say.
Oh, nice for you. If you'll excuse me,